What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful Monday, and we hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend. Derek's here. I'm here. David's here. Willie is back in L.A., where the Predators will once again face the Los Angeles Kings tonight in a big one, a huge one, a massive one, an enormous one. I ran out of synonyms, but it's a big one. 9:30 p.m. Central puck drop, 8:30 p.m. Central pregame, as always, right here on 102.5 The Game. And I do want to start today's program by reading a text from my wife. So, as all of you may know, my wife and kids are in Florida visiting my wife's parents. I drop them off on Thursday, mid to late morning. They come back tomorrow. And from what I understand, they have been having a wonderful time. But I woke up this morning and received a text message from my wife at 7:52 a.m. And it reads this, quote, "Our son is being an a-hole." She did not say a-hole. I can't say what she actually said.
There was no mincing of the words.
No. Our son is being an a-hole, quote, unquote.
Hey. That is a mom's right to vent.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Throw that out there.
Hey, if a mom says that, then he is, that's what he's being.
Yep.
Yes, he's terrorizing his cousin, who's roughly the same age. Apparently, at the beach earlier today, he knocked down some of her sandcastles.
Oh, my goodness.
And then when she yelled at him for doing that, he got upset because she yelled at him, to which my wife said, "You did it! So you could be yelled at."
He's a madman. Arlo was going, wow.
You got to test
Arlo in Florida.
He is being a Florida man.
Exactly.
A Florida man.
He is being a Florida man. And I guess my wife must be listening. Spoiler alert, she's not. But just as I'm saying that, she sent me another text message. 302, quote, "Arlo is being such a jerk. He told Stella, my niece, no one is going to be her best friend."
Oh, my goodness, Arlo.
Arlo, what is going on down there?
Florida man.
Yes.
On this episode of Florida Man.
I'm texting her back. He's being
such a
Florida man.
Oh, my goodness. Arlo is off hands right now, man.
It's spring break for Arlo.
Oh,
he is,
man, he's having it.
He's throwing caution to the wind. I mean, I mean, Willie is a Florida man, but Willie doesn't have these problems.
Oh, man.
Did the Florida men exist when you were living in Florida, or is this a new thing?
100%. Are you kidding? Anytime you could go to somebody's neighborhood and there might be alligators in the water nearby and people are throwing steaks to the alligators, I mean, you know, it can get a little bit off the rail.
Very quickly, I'm sure.
What kind of steaks are we talking here?
Porterhouse?
I've seen it all.
T-bone?
They think it's a good idea to bring the alligators out of the water up to your porch. Or not porch, but it was like an overhang. Mm-hmm. You know, you had elevation. But they're like, yeah, let's feed them. You know, and we're like, no, don't do it. Like, but this is the Florida man. The Florida man says, yeah, we can do that. Sounds like a great idea.
It seems a little inhumane.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a little.
What is in the water in Florida?
Did
Arlo drink some water?
I don't know what's going on with him. You know how it is with kids.
Oh, man.
Too much togetherness.
Yeah.
They've been playing with each other now
for
4 or 5 days. Yeah, the sun's getting to him, obviously. So hopefully he gets whatever this is out of his system. Because if he's acting like this when I pick him up tomorrow, we're going to have problems. We're going to have problems.
Daddy's putting down the law.
I'm not much of a disciplinarian. Oh, man. But, yeah.
You're going to put your foot down now.
I'm going to have to. I think I'm going to have to. But when nothing I woke up this that. Morning, my first thought was, well, he's not my problem today.
I'm glad she didn't hear that. I pray to God she didn't hear that.
Hopefully she's not listening.
I don't think she's listening right now. But what will happen is I'll tell her that we talked about this, then she'll go back and listen, and then I'll get in trouble. So I'm setting myself up here. So maybe I just won't tell her to listen. Anyway, let's get back to the news of the day. And there's a lot of news today. We've got Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter at 3:40. We're going to get into the NFL draft. We're going to get into college basketball. The men's national title game is tonight. We'll get into the women's tournament as well. Gino Auriemma is a big old baby, and we will discuss that as well later in the program. But let's start with the local professional hockey team, as I alluded to earlier. The Predators are back in L.A. Willie was in L.A., went to San Jose. Now he's back in L.A. For yet another matchup with the Kings. Again, a 9:30 p.m. Central puck drop, 8:30 p.m. Central pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. And it's the biggest game of the season yet again. All of these games are huge games for the Predators. MoneyPuck.com says there is a 40 percentage point swing tonight for the Predators and Kings playoff chances depending on the outcome of this game. The Predators are coming off of a 6-3 win in San Jose on Saturday night. The Predators jumped out to a 3-0 lead. The Sharks fought back. And then the Predators, thanks to Ryan O'Reilly and Eric Halla, prevented the Sharks' comeback attempt. So, Willie, let's set up the biggest game of the year once again. Predators versus Kings tonight, late night in L.A.
Yeah, it's it is great that they keep earning these chances to go out there and play in games that mean so much. I try to keep that in the back of my mind the whole time and not take it for granted, because it really, you know, back in November and December, we just didn't think, none of us on our show and probably 99% of the fan base just thought that this was not possible just to get to this point. And the guys in that locker room, they never gave up hope. And so they've shown some character here. You know, for a long time, remember, guys, they kept falling behind 2-0 and coming back and finding ways to win or make games of it. Now they've had two straight games where they have not been able to hang on or grow a 3-goal lead. They've come back to tie, and they've still found ways to win. So they have taken every route. They have been through the ringer. They're pretty battle-tested. And then you play a game against the Kings, who seem to go to overtime every time they play. So it really does look like this will be a fun game to watch tonight.
And I don't want to get too hyperbolic, because we've been talking about the biggest game of the year over the past several games. The last game against the Kings was the biggest game of the year. The game against the Sharks on Saturday was the biggest game of the year. This is the biggest game of the year. But I do think, Willie and Derek, that a lot does hinge on this game, because it is the last time that these two teams will meet this season. As Willie mentioned, the Kings yet again went to overtime on Saturday and won 7-6 against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Kings and Predators are tied in points. The Predators will have the tiebreaker against the Kings. The number one tiebreaker in the NHL is regulation wins. The Predators have 26, the Kings have 19, and they have six games left. So the Predators have the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. So if the Kings want to make the playoffs, they will have to finish with more points than the Predators. If they finish tied, the Predators, based on the standings at the moment, will ultimately win that tiebreaker.
Are you eliminating San Jose right now?
I am not eliminating San Jose. Willie, you tell me. I am waving goodbye to the Seattle Kraken. I think the Seattle Kraken have played themselves out of the wild card race. They are 6 points back with 7 games left. They've lost 3 in a row, 8 of 10. See ya. So I am putting Seattle in a different category. The Predators are there are 5 teams within 3 points of that final spot. Nashville, L.A., San Jose, St. Louis, and Winnipeg. And there are some big games tonight, Willie, other than the Predators game against the Kings. The Kraken play the Jets, and the Blackhawks play the Sharks. So a lot of Western wildcard teams are in action tonight. So a lot of scoreboard watching that's going to be happening. So I do think if the Predators can get a win in regulation, take a two-point lead on the Kings with five games left in the season, knowing they have the tiebreaker, that is huge. So I do think there is a lot riding on this game.
Yeah, and you feel like tomorrow. Now, the Ducks have been slumping, but the Ducks will be very rested going into tomorrow's game in Anaheim. And then you've got a really tough one against Utah on Thursday. So the trip only gets tougher from here, even though they've already won two ginormous games to start this trip to put themselves back into a reasonable position here. But, boy, I mean, there's so many possibilities here. It's just you wouldn't even have to put the probability up there, right, to realize that the importance of the head-to-head, like the old four-point game, to be able to win this game tonight would give you such a great inside track. It gives you just a little bit of margin for error. And like I just said, it'll be tough to win the last couple of games on this trip. You're going to have that back end of back-to-back to deal with tomorrow against the playoff team, and then you got to go to Utah, which is always a tough place to win.
Now, when you mean win, you mean they need to get the 2 points and the Kings none. This doesn't need to go into a shootout.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, ideally, yeah. Yes. But I mean,
a win is a win. The
Kings have set a record for going to overtime. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody goes to overtime more than the Kings. It's already history, and they're only adding to it. So I just assume every Kings game goes to overtime, so I would not be surprised if that happens tonight.
I mean, if you're a betting man, which I'm not.
They've had 13 of them.
If you're a betting man, put some shekels on this game going to overtime, because it's a safe bet. Because that's what the
31
Kings.
31 times they've been to overtime.
It has to been 30.
The Kings have set two NHL records. Correct me if I'm wrong, Willie. For most games that have gone to overtime and most overtime losses in a season.
Hmm. Yep, Derek, you mentioned 13 shootouts, which is a really high number of shootouts to have. The Predators have only had six. So shootouts don't typically happen as much as maybe they did early, but it's incredible what's happening with them. They've also, the Kings have been dealing with trying to figure out who to play in goal. And just the other night, after the Predators beat Darcy Kemper and scored four on him, and he looked very shaky early in the game, their coach, DJ Smith, came back and said, it's his net. He's the veteran. He's going in there. He's going to be our guy. He proceeds to then give up six to the Maple Leafs. It goes to overtime, and William Nylander of the Maple Leafs had a breakaway that would have won it, could have won it. He kind of fanned on the shot. Kemper outlets, and Quinton Byfield scores. So they are going back to Anton Forsberg, no relation to Philip Forsberg, but Anton Forsberg has been basically a career backup, but he's been playing better than Kemper, and so he's going to get the start tonight against the Preds.
John on our text line says, you can't spell Florida without Arlo. I mean, that is true.
Oh, man.
That is true. I'm not sure my son is actually a Florida man in training, but we'll see. Golf My Way on the YouTube chat says, like father, like son. Ouch. Ouch.
That hit hard, didn't it?
Yesterday was Easter. Where's your Easter spirit? Let's not be mean to me.
Because of Arlo.
Yes, because of my son. But that's okay. He's got a little piss and vinegar in him. Yeah. And that's okay. And that's okay. We did see something, speaking of Easter, we did see something in the NHL yesterday that was quite shocking, I guess you could say, Willie. Get another coach fired by a team in a playoff spot. The New York Islanders fired Patrick Waugh and hired Pete DeBoer. The Islanders have four games left. They are in a playoff spot. At the moment, they are not in a playoff spot, but they were when they fired Patrick Waugh. And the Islanders have been struggling. They've lost 7 of 10, 4 in a row. But for the second week in a row, second Sunday in a row, Willie, a team in a playoff spot fires its coach with fewer than 10 games left in the season.
I mean, I guess I should say I'm shocked, but after what Vegas did, I'm not totally shocked. And also, just the what we know about the personality of Patrick Waugh, you know, he's always been a guy that, you know, his emotions he wears on his sleeve. He is charismatic. So if there's a type of coach that would be in this position, it might be Patrick Waugh, right? And so they go in with Pete DeBoer, who has been on standby, I think, the whole year. And there were some people that thought that Vegas would turn to him. So the Islanders make the move, and maybe they got to jump on everybody else, that DeBoer will just be their guy next year. That'll be interesting, because as much as the Islanders, or you could say they're in the playoffs, but they've been reeling right now, and there's so much push for that last spot, they have got to get it together, or they are not going to make the playoffs. So this is a lot of pressure on DeBoer, I would say, right off the bat.
One texter says, maybe it was a typo. Your wife meant to say he's being Arlo, not an a-hole. No, I can show you the text. It was clearly not autocorrect.
It wasn't like A-team.
No.
Like dash. It was Arlo. You just.
Yes.
I mean, it was you know what.
Yes.
And she was not just misspelling Sebastian Aho.
Exactly.
Right? No. She wasn't trying to say he's being like Sebastian Aho.
My wife has no idea who that is. So she absolutely wasn't saying he was being Sebastian Aho, but similar, I guess you could say. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, who have yet another big game tonight at LA, 9:30 p.m. Central, puck drop here on 102.5 The Game. Playoff odds will swing massively depending on the outcome of this game. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, as I was watching the game on Saturday, something occurred to me about one Predators player in particular. And I want to share my theory coming up next. 615-737-1025. Tee it up with us at the 5th annual 615 Open, May 28th at Hermitage Golf Course. We are once again supporting Folds of Honor to help them fund life-changing scholarships for families of America's fallen heroes. Register now to play or sponsor at 615open.com.
Talk about the emotions for you tonight, not just playing at Nashville, but just a big game like this, important game like this.
Yeah. This was a big game for our team. You didn't play well in the first period, and second and third we played better.
How do you see your game tonight?
Next question.
That was Yaroslav Askarov, former Predators goaltender, now starting or playing for the San Jose Sharks. He had a rough one against his old club on Saturday night, allowed 5 goals, including 3 on the first 9 shots against, as the Predators win 6-3 against the Sharks as they look to make the playoffs. I'll get to my theory in just a moment, but first let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Michigan in the borough. Michigan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. It's a beautiful day. I'm very excited to tell all of you guys I went up from quarter season tickets to half season tickets next year. There you go. That's how much this franchise has broken my brain in the last 6 weeks, is I'm actually going up in season tickets as other people are complaining about going down. But question I want to ask you guys, kind of a nuanced question here, and I'm going to skip a little bit of Predators, but it does affect the Predators, since you guys love hockey as much as I do. Are any of you tracking this very, very interesting story going on with the OHL and Cade O'Rourke? And what are your opinions on it, if so? And just for a little background for anybody who's not aware, a lot of really good OHL players have gone to the NCAAs the last handful of years. Jack Hughes was one. Owen Power was another. And Cade O'Rourke, who I think would be playing at 15 in the OHL if he gets the exemplary player status awarded to him, would be a guy who would otherwise probably go to an NCAA institution and is going to play in the OHL instead. And I wonder if you guys think that might have an interesting impact on draft strategy whoever the next GM of the Predators is. I hope it's Scott White from Dallas. Anytime you can pick off the Jim Nill tree, I'm very, very interested in that fruit. But I'm going to be watching the game like everybody else tonight. Good luck, Willie. Hope it's a great game. And I'll see you guys rest of this week.
Thank you, Michigan. An interesting question, and I will be honest. I have not been following that story closely, so I don't want to pretend that I have and give you an uneducated answer. Willie, do you have any response to Michigan's question?
Yeah, for his question, I think what you're seeing now is because of NIL and the opportunities that are out there for the best Canadian junior players to make money at an earlier age, everybody's kind of going that way. So what the nation of Canada, who, you know, hockey is sacred to, what they have tried to do is preserve their system as best they can and keep the best players who are that age, you know, 15 through 18, or it could be as high as 20, right, playing in the juniors. But they're getting picked off because now they can go, and the rules are such that they can get an agent, they can go in and play for, you know, Michigan State or Wisconsin or one of the Boston teams. You know, there's more and more programs that are ready to pay for top-level players. So what that's doing is, you know, that's leaving that Canadian Junior League a little bit dry of top prospects. And so younger players like this kid that Michigan was talking about, you know, he's a special talent. He's only 15. I don't think you can get drafted until you're age eligible. You know, everybody's age eligible around age 18. You know, some are maybe still 17 when the draft happens. Depends on when your birthday is. But it's just getting him to that level higher, earlier than he normally would be. And you have to kind of get a special permission to do that, which I think is going to happen in this case. But it's interesting how the whole system is changing. For example, how it affects the Predators. Next year, the rule might be as such is they could have Brady Martin, their number one prospect, the fifth pick in the draft last summer, they could have him play in Milwaukee, whereas before the rules were very strict as you had to either play in the NHL or if you had played in the Canadian junior system, you had to stay there. You could not go to the minor leagues in between. But that might change. People think it's going to change, which I think will speed up Brady Martin's development.
Let's go to CJ in Hendersonville on our phone line. CJ, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas, good stuff as always. Definitely interested in the hockey game tonight. I do got a quick question, Willie, everyone's thoughts on this. Why, and tell me, there's an old saying there's something about that old boy I don't like about myself, but why, what is it, if you guys could help me out deeply, why do I hate Dan Hurley so much?
Thank you for the call, CJ. I mean, how much time do you have? We will get to the NCAA men's basketball championship game tonight, UConn versus Michigan. I mean,
oh man,
isn't it self-explanatory? But yeah, thank you for the call, CJ. We will get to that later in the program, but I do want to get to my theory. So coming back from break, we played that clip from Yaroslav Askarov after he allowed 5 goals against his former team Saturday night. And when I saw that Askarov and UC Saros were going head-to-head for the first time since Askarov went to San Jose almost 2 years ago, I knew that Saturday's game would act as a referendum on the deal, especially if Askarov outdueled Saros, which did not happen. But that got me thinking about something that I've been thinking about for a little while. And I want y'all's opinion on it, Willie and Derek, but also all of you, 615-737-1025. Here's my theory. UC Saros has a perception problem. The perception is that he is incapable of carrying the team. And when you are considered one of the top goaltenders in the NHL, there is an expectation that you will level up when the games matter most. UC Saros has had a solid season for the Predators. There is hard data that supports that. The guy has won, by the way, 7 of his past 10 starts in high-pressure situations. But when the Predators blow multiple 3-goal leads, as they have in their past 2 games, Saros bears the brunt of that, even if it was not entirely his fault. It does not help his case that he gave up two bad rebounds that led to goals against in the Kings game, but that's what stands out to a lot of people, more so than Saros' performance in the shootout that helped the Predators win that Kings game. Remember, Kings skaters went 0-for-8 against UC Saros in that shootout late last week. So the Predators have 6 games left. Willie, I would not be surprised if Saros starts 5 of them. Maybe 4, but it would not surprise me if he starts 5 of them. There's only one back-to-back left today and tomorrow. And I hope that Saros has some outstanding performances down the stretch. Because if the Predators miss the playoffs, after all the work they have done to get here, you know that is going to only fuel the narrative that Saros isn't worth the contract he signed. So that's my theory, Willie. UC Saros, through no fault of his own necessarily, has a perception problem. Your thoughts?
He's winning. He's 6-1-1 in his last 8 starts.
But you know this exists. You know this exists.
Right, but it's like he wins the game against Askarov, who now he prefers to be called Askarov.
Oh, I'm
by
sorry.
The way. And,
my bad.
And I do
get his name right.
I know, it's weird. He went to San Jose and he said, "Yeah, call me Askarov." Where after we were with him for 3 years in Milwaukee, and we went over it, how you say it really in Russian, which is Askarov. But that's neither here nor there. And I will say, for him to go out and take the questions like he did after that game, that was the biggest game they'd played, the Sharks, in 6 years, right? And that was a hostile environment. And the Predators won. Askarov did not play very well. I give him a lot of credit for, as a Russian young goalie, to go out there and take the questions in English. I'm sure he had a lot to say, but he doesn't know that much of how to, you know, go into depth and detail. So I still think he's got a chance to be really good in the future, but he's nowhere near. And that kind of gets me to what we're asking here. If you're still thinking that's a bad contract for UC Saros, look at where the contracts have gone. He's not overpaid at all. And the alternative is, for those that still subscribe to this theory, is you'd rather have Askarov as your guy right now, who clearly has shown that he's not ready to carry a team or anything close to it. So I don't really get it. I mean, UC Saros is the goalie. And we just got done talking about the Kings and their dilemma right now. They haven't had a save all year long, right? Their defensive metrics are outstanding, but their goalies haven't done well enough to really take advantage of that. The same thing is happening in Vegas, which is why they fired their coach, and really no other reason. So it's hard to be a goalie these days. So we're still stuck on the same narrative, but I think the narrative, it's evolving, right? The Predators aren't a great defensive team. They're not a great team in general. But I still think UC Saros is an excellent goalie. He's not having a career year or anything close to it. But I think he's still a heck of a lot better choice than a lot of the other options out there.
Let's go back to the Olympics for a moment. I think we would all agree. UC Saros had a strong showing at the Olympics for Finland. Yes?
Yes.
Overall, he had a strong showing for Finland. What do people remember most about Finland in relation to UC Saros during the Olympics? The upset loss to Slovakia to open the tournament, and the fact that Finland could not hold a multi-goal lead against Canada. Again, I am not blaming UC Saros.
That's not what I remember the most. But I get it. But
Willie, I say this as lovingly.
But you're admitting that everybody's going to jump to the one negative when you start off by saying he had a really good tournament. But, you know what I mean? Like, we're only focusing on the times where he doesn't get it done. That's life of a goalie. A goalie doesn't get it done every time.
I understand that. And I say this as lovingly as I can, Willie. You are the biggest Saros fanboy I know. And I know that extends beyond the ice for good reason. But I know that when I think about people who defend UC Saros as staunchly as anybody else, you are the first person on that list. This is not me criticizing UC Saros. This is me saying I believe he has a perception problem. There are a lot of fans in this city who do not think that UC Soros can win games when it matters. I'm not telling you that's how I feel. I am saying that is something that I have noticed, which is why I'm saying I think it's incredibly
important. But you seem to be endorsing that. And
no.
Not
how am I endorsing
that? You should be challenging that and not endorsing it.
But how am I endorsing it?
Because you understand the game better than some people that make this point. And I get it. He has not played as well as he has played in his career, but he's still playing at a level that's way better than, I would say, most of the goalies in the league. In perspective, the save percentage around the league is way down, and so it's very difficult to play goalie in the league. And he's also not ever been on a loaded team. Chris Mason always makes the point, if he were playing goalie for Minnesota or Colorado or a team that's got a loaded roster, his numbers would be that much, it would be way better. And I don't think he would have this perception. He has not been a goalie on a powerful, powerful Predators team. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, yes. I to be clear, I am not endorsing this theory that he can't win big games. I am telling you that he can play well, but if he doesn't win while also playing well, people begin to think he can't win big games. That is the perception problem.
They have been in the big games. Finland versus Canada, right?
Yes.
Who's the underdog?
Finland.
A huge underdog.
Absolutely.
Predators versus Carolina Hurricanes in the playoffs a few years ago. Who's the underdog?
The only series to save
a huge
you,
underdog.
To save, you, I mean, the, to save you time, the only playoff series that UC Soros has played in where the Predators were not the underdog was the qualifying round series against the Coyotes during the COVID year. That's the only series the Predators played where they were not the underdog. Just to save you time.
Right. And at that point, that was a very unique situation where nobody had played in however many months that was, 2-3 months. And you still had this, is it Pekka Rinne or is it UC Soros? Soros had started to take the starting job away from Rinne, but that was still very much a big part of that equation. So that's a long time ago if you're looking at that.
615-737-1025. We will get back to this. 615-737-1025. My theory. UC Soros has a perception problem, and I think it's incredibly important for him to play well down the stretch and get the Predators into the playoffs to erase, or at least begin to erase, that perception problem. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us. We'll get into the Titans as the NFL draft approaches. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Tee it up with us at the 5th annual 615. I already read that. Never mind. I'm going to read it again. Tee it up with us at the 5th annual 615 Open, May 28th at Hermitage Golf Course. We are once again supporting Folds of Honor to help them fund life-changing scholarships for families of America's fallen heroes. Register now to play or sponsor at 615open.com. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025. The game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. I promise I won't read the same read twice as I've already had. But now you know about the 615 Open. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. Hi, TD. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us, as always. So as the NFL draft approaches and we talk about all of the prospects who could go to the Titans at number 4, I want to ask you about Carnell Tate specifically. We know that Ohio State is a wide receiver factory. And I know that you put in the time, you grind the film. How does Carnell Tate compare to other top wide receiver prospects from Ohio State in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, I think he ranks below the guys that have come out, you know, as prospects, he ranks below them, but that doesn't mean he's not a good player. And you look at the guy, I mean, you're talking about Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba. There's so many. Marvin Harrison Jr. You could go on and on. Emeka, I always do that. I always
Abuka.
Do that. Emeka Okafor, Abuka. Yeah, I always just, you know, I'm thinking back to the UConn center. But anyhow, like all those guys, really good players. And to say that he's not right there with them is not saying he's a bad player. He's a complete guy. I love the way he's able to get vertical. He runs his routes well. He catches the slant well. He has nice size. 4.5 is still fast. I don't care what, you know, people act like that's not a fast time. He's decent. He's solid enough to get down the field. Now, is he someone I would take top five? No, but that doesn't mean he's not a good receiver.
Big news in the NFL today, Teron. Giants defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence has reportedly asked for a trade from the Giants. And now, because of the connection with Brian Daboll and all of the players that the Titans brought in who had some connection to Brian Daboll, do you anticipate the Titans having any interest whatsoever in at least exploring a trade for Dexter Lawrence?
No, I don't think it's likely. I think when you look at that scheme, you know, it's not really meant for a guy like, as much of a guy like Dexter Lawrence. You know, he's along the lines of Jeffrey Simmons. He's kind of like in between a Simmons and Tavondre Sweat. You know what I mean? When you talk about the style of play. So I don't think he would be a automatic fit here. And also, you got to remember, this team, they want to draft and develop, you know, and this is the same team where you have a president of football operations say he wanted to draft 10 guys in the top three rounds over the next 3 years. So a trade for Dexter Lawrence wouldn't really be in line with the overall vision.
Now, Teron, with that being said, what are the likelihoods you believe? Because as we start to get closer and closer to the draft, and you spoke with Saleh and Borghanzi, and it made it seem like they just want the best player. Now, as we continue to go and get closer to the draft, how likely do you think it is that they trade out of that fourth spot?
I think it's very unlikely, unless there's some type of wild offer, godfather offer they can't refuse. But you kind of led into something that I wanted to talk about, because I want to get this name in the mix for that number four pick, and it's not one that people are really talking about, but I'll be writing about it soon, and that's Sonny Styles. And I think when you look at Robert Saleh, one of the things he told us out there in Phoenix was about the Mike linebacker and how they're required, you know, hash to hash, right? They got to carry those routes. And you look at, you know, what teams like to do. They like to run those crossers and the things like that. You need a linebacker that could not only move with those guys running those crossing routes, but have the ability, the length to impact those routes that are behind it. Because as you know, it's always layered. And when you have a 6'4 guy with a 40-inch vertical, it makes it a lot harder to get the ball to that 20-yard inbreaker, you know, that's behind that crossing route that they like to do to try to, high-low defenders.
Now, TD, I think it was either Borghanzi, it may have been Borghanzi that said, hey, it could be, you know, there is a high possibility, or in theory, they could go with two rookies on the offensive line. And with that being said, do you see them going heavy? Do you think he was more so talking young offensive linemen? Because they do have some offensive linemen on their roster that are going into their second year. But do you think they can go heavy offensive line after the first and possibly the second round?
Yeah, absolutely. I would be surprised if they don't, honestly. One of the things that Borghanzi said was he feels that there are guys who are, you know, potential starters, you know, late day two and into day three. So it wouldn't surprise me if they stock up there. Look, man, the tackle position isn't guaranteed. Dan Moore Jr., probably another year. J.C. Latham is still developing. And then you look at the guard situation, obviously right guard is open, right? And Jackson Slater's there. But, you know, what if he ends up going to center and Austin Slotman doesn't work out? So there's a lot of questions. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go heavy O-line. And he kind of alluded to it, you know, saying that they're starters at that part of the draft.
Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, let's go back to Sonny Styles for a moment, because it's such a big philosophy, somewhat similar, I guess, to the running back, that the guy has to be super special to be worth getting picked that high just because of the position he plays. You did a great job of sort of outlining why he would fit so well. But just from a talent standpoint, Styles does feel like he's got that ability, right? He's a needle mover.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's a needle mover. He has NFL bloodlines too, by the way. You know, his father played in the league, and then you look, I believe it was for the Falcons. Then also you see his brother, is an NFL prospect as well. And I think you just look at the tape. Most of the time, number zero was first to the football, right? And you look, the amount of missed tackles he has is the same number as the number on his jersey, zero. And this is a guy that you could not only use in the pass game against the run, but you could also use him rushing the passer because he has that length. I mean, he's 6'4", you know, 230, right in that range, and he runs, he's strong, he has the demeanor, everything about him. And, you know, as I sat and thought about it more and more, when Mike Borgonzi was saying best player available regardless of position, at that point, when he said it, I went right to running back because of Jeremiah Love mix. But I think that applies to linebacker here too. So, and that's why I say, you know, put Sonny Styles in the mix.
What do you think that Cody Barton and Cedric Gray, who basically play that position right now, especially Gray, I want to hear your opinion on him because I know we're all pretty excited about what he does. I mean, he got a lot of tackles. Like, he was productive. He was noticeable last year. How does he fit in this new system?
Yeah, I think he's more of a Sam, and you move Barton to Will, and, you know, you got Sonny Styles at Mike, and he's on the field all the time. And then you'll have, you know, either Barton or Gray come off when they go to sub package, and that's the way I see that thing working. But, I mean, look, you know, Cedric Gray's an awesome player, you know, when it comes to what he was asked to do last year, you know. But I think in this scheme, the coverage aspect is where there's a shortcoming, and that's why a guy like Sonny Styles comes into the mix.
Okay, so if you take away the position need and all of that, if you're just rating Styles versus Jeremiah Love, if you put a grade on either one, which one would you grade higher?
I don't know, man.
In the whole best player available, right? You see what I'm asking?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're asking. That's a tough one, man, because, you know, Styles is an outlier physically. Like, you look at what he brings. I might have to say Styles, man. At 6'4", 235, wherever he is, the 40-inch vertical, the 4.47, the demeanor, the bloodline. I might have to say Styles.
Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Monday. TD, as always, fantastic stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. I appreciate it. And, hey, man, even though Juan Soto is on that injured list, it's still go Mets. I'll be up there on Friday to see him.
All right. This is your first time? You're still a season ticket holder, I take it.
Yeah, this will be my second game. I went to the home opener.
Oh, nice. See, Teron gets things done. He finds a way to get up there.
Willie, you just missed your Mets in San Francisco.
I know.
You leave the Bay Area, they show up.
No, well, I could have gone. I'm mad at myself, but I had a very special family that happened to be in town, and their daughter goes to Santa Clara, so they had a big 21st birthday party for her, a family that it's like family to our family. Our kids grew up together and all that stuff. So I chose them over the Mets. I still, part of me wanted to be out there, though. And they did well. Hey, 3 out of 4, Teron.
Teron hung up, unfortunately.
How did you let Teron go? We're talking Mets.
Teron was like, damn this.
I had nothing to do with it.
I thought y'all were done.
Okay, that's fine. If you would have gone to the game, you would have seen Tony Vitello's first MLB ejection.
Oh, yes.
He did have a point. I saw the video.
He did have a point.
Well, but that's the way that's the rule. Rule's the rule.
I know, but I think he had a point, and he got tossed, and I thought
it's a dumb rule.
I give him that. Need to text him and let him know that rule. Willie.
I've never understood
it's
that
the ba-
rule.
It was the base path rule or something, right? Like, yeah.
Well, there's a lane that's not a lane that anybody runs. Like, if you're a right-handed batter and you're running to first base, the most direct line doesn't take you through the baseline, right? The pathway that they have with the white lines. And if you run the most direct route to first, you're going to be on the inside of that. You're going to be in fair territory, which creates every now and then a play that comes up with. And the umpire in the rules can call the guy out. I've never understood it. It's easier for a left-handed batter, so I never really had to worry about it because you're coming out of the left-handed batter's box. You're going to run through the base path. You're going to run down that lane. But a right-handed hitter always has to cut across, and that's going to slow you down. So why would you do that? It's just a dumb rule that's been in baseball for over 100 years.
615-737-1025. All right. It appears to me that I may, like, I want to get back to the Soros thing for a moment.
Did you stir some up?
Well, I was admittedly surprised by Willie's reaction to what I said.
Okay.
There's somebody in the text line saying something similar, so I feel like we need to hash this out.
Oh, okay.
And we will do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. I am not going to read the same read three times. Join 1025 The Game and catch the biggest golf tournament of the year at 5 Iron Golf, located at 202 21st Ave South in Nashville. We will be broadcasting live all day from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday. Stop in and enjoy great food, golf prizes, and more with fellow fans from start to finish. Don't miss it, only at 5 Iron Golf.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.